today on Rockin' the Suburbs. Hey, EPJ, it's time to record the episode. Are you awake?
I'm wide awake. I'm wide awake.
Wide awake?
I'm not sleeping.
Okay, EPJ, play the blues. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Hello, everyone. This is Mike Wagner, and today I'm sitting in, replacing Jim and Patrick. They're away, and I am joined by our good friend. You know him. You love him. It is...
Echo Park Jimmy, or EPJ for short.
There you go. Today, we are going to talk about you two around the Joshua Tree era, sort of after Unforgettable Fire. And sort of through bits of Rattle and Hum and just some what we're calling the Joshua Bees, right? The B-sides around that era that we really think are great songs. And kind of what, talk about, EBJ, talk about one of the things that kind of spurred this on. You've mentioned the song Party Girl in the past.
It was a kind of an obscure B-side from, you know, early in their career, Trash, Trampoline, and Party Girl. And then it showed up on Under a Blood Red Sky, and it became a magnificent song. Like, you know, a B-side became an A-side, and it became a trend in their career. So I always had a keen eye out for B-sides because I knew the quality was beyond a lot of other bands' B-sides, if you will. And to this day, I recently heard, during the Joshua Tree tour at Madison Square Garden, they do Party Girl. And the crowd sings along like they know it by heart, like all their other songs. And so it's like, wow, that's a B-side. This band is special.
What we're going to do is we're going to sort of break it up into a couple of chunks. And the first chunk, like we're saying, is post Unforgettable Fire.
Because they released an EP, Wide Awake in America, which was two live songs and two B-sides. Am I right?
Yes, that's right. And one of the things that we both notice is like on the album Unforgettable Fire and the song Bad in particular, it was actually a really good song, but there was sort of a looseness and an openness to it. And it was a good song, but somehow when they took it to the stage, they sort of focused it a little bit more, it seemed like, and it just became this incredible showstopper of a song. And I actually remember seeing them on that tour and it was amazing.
It went from kind of like an inward-looking song, you know, a good indie rocker, to like just a magnificent epic, where yep. It was still tragic, and it still, you know, you still felt what he was singing about, but the live version, it just came to life. But listen to A Sort of Homecoming, and listen to Bad, and now think about those songs again.
Thank you. But there was another song on that EP called The Three Sunrises. It's just a great song. It's got this incredible harmonies from Edge, and he does this amazing guitar solo as well. It's not really a solo. It's this weird guitar break. It's fantastic. Any thoughts on this song, EBJ?
It's a crunchy guitar break. It starts out, you know, with just a beautiful, just kind of Bono melody. But then, as you say, as the song progresses, it becomes these beautiful ethereal harmonies that just, they never leave your head. I mean, when we were looking up these old B-sides, that is one that I don't even have to play it. Like, when you bring up that song, I'm like, oh, yeah. Spirit of the rising sun.
Like we said, those songs actually came from that EP. And then the Joshua Tree was released in 87. With the singles from the Joshua Tree, they released these 12-inch singles, and the flip side had these great B-sides. So you had to go out and buy them, and they were great. One of the first ones that was released, one of those that was released with, still haven't found one I'm looking for, is a song called Spanish Eyes.
Magnificent Bono vocal. It starts with kind of some unforgettable fire kind of guitars, and you're like, oh, is this an outtake from that? No. He starts singing just in his inimitable style, and at one point, he just starts to scream almost like he's in the Doors or something. It's a song that, if you know it well, you love Spanish Eyes, and it's definitely one of my favorites.
One thing about Spanish Eyes in particular is that there's you can kind of feel like there's a with a lot of some of these B-sides I read, they kind of went in the studio and there, I think it said there wasn't a producer or, you know, there was an engineer and the tracks were done in a very, in a much less sort of official capacity. And I think the heaviness of which U2 has always kind of sort of carried themselves didn't carry into these songs. And there's a looseness about that particular song that I really like.
Yeah, it just sounds like they're like, yeah, let's go with it. No, let's rewrite that. No, it's just a simple song. It's about Spanish eyes, whatever, you know, it's just a simple, nice little ditty, but it rocks.
Some of the songs, you can tell, like on the Joshua Tree, they I'm sure they really, really, really worked at it and sort of focused and took a lot of time. I mean, it's legendary how long it took them to record Streets. I think they said that was like half the album was just recording Streets Have No Name. And songs like Exit, which are really well produced and really focused and really tight. And you can tell there was a lot of work went into those. But also it was really nice to hear them have a real looseness in the studio and come up with these really, you know, these little gems of songs.
They were gems, and I think they were proud of them, because I wouldn't shut up about it to you this afternoon. They released...
Well, you never shut up.
You know... that's you. That's Patrick. He can't defend himself. For each single, you could buy an LP-sized single. Like, you were buying... Right. Gatefold. Maybe not a gatefold every time, but there was... really good B-sides, maybe a live version. They were really proud of them. So if you had an album collection, by the end of the Joshua Tree, you know, those couple of years, you had not just Joshua Tree, but you had like five albums next to it that had all these good B-sides on there.
Right. I mean, I went out and bought them straight away because they were so good. So.
Yes. With the Anton and art and everything. I mean, they were like... sequels, little mini sequels to Joshua Tree.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the song on the B-side of Where the Streets Have No Name, which is one of my actually favorite U2 songs ever, is a song called The Sweetest Thing. And Edge does this great piano bit, great guitar. Actually, the guitar is not prominent, but he does lots of really interesting things that go with the piano. The drums kind of picking up the pace at the end there. Just really fantastic. A great Bono vocal. Really love that song. It was actually written for his wife, I think.
Yes. It's probably his best romantic, just strict kind of romantic song. It's just very heartfelt and very, just a wonderful song.
The next song we're going to talk about is a song called Silver and Gold, which they recorded for Miami Steve Van Zandt's Sun City project.
Little Steven wanted to bring attention to the situation in South Africa. And if, you know, it's kind of a familiar story now, but at the time there wasn't any media attention on it. So he wrote a song and he asked, you know, he made a little all-star album, and then it, you know, he didn't know it at the time, but Bono was, like we say, and the B-sides were so good, he's like, this might be a B-side, but we'll put it on this album for Little Steven.
We're not going to play the version that's on the Sun City album. What we wanted to do is play the version that is on, we're going to go ahead and cheat a little bit here, and play the version that's on Rattle and Hum, because, and we're going to actually focus on one bit and something that I think U2 took a lot of flack for. When they were playing in the Joshua Tree, they'd take a break during the song. Not a break, but they'd have a you know, it was kind of break it down and be quiet. And Bono would be sort of talking to the audience. And at this one point, he goes, "Am I bugging you? I don't mean to bug you." And you could kind of tell, like, they kind of knew that it was, like, it was not going over well. You know what I mean? And then he goes, oddly, and me and EPJ laugh at this all the time. He goes, "Okay, Edge, play the blues." And you're like, wait, this is not a blues solo, right? I mean,
he plays kind of like a really avant-garde, for even for the Edge, kind of guitar solo. And yeah, it's, I mean, it's brilliant, but it's not necessarily the blues.
Yeah, it's just something we always laugh about. And that was another thing, since we always laugh about that.
It's become a go-to catchphrase, but okay, Edge, play the blues. But on a more serious note, that, like I said, him and Little Steven were really trying to bring attention to this issue. And Bono, more so than even, I think, under Bullet the Blue Sky, the lyrics are really gritty and really speak to the issue in a really haunting manner. And so during the break, you know, instead of introducing the band or singing America, he's like, "This is what this song's about." And then people are like, "I'm going to go get a hot dog, man." And he's like, "Am I bugging you?" And he's like, "Do you know who I am? Do you know who we are? We're you two. So here's your rock and roll." And then they serve it up in a big slab. So the song goes from a haunting opening to a hilarious, you know, break. You know, at the end of the day, it's a
blistering guitar solo. Yeah. One of his best. And both me and EVJ are big fans of Edge's guitar playing.
It's a song written about a man. A shanty town outside of Johannesburg. A man is sick, looking down the barrel of white South Africa. A man who is at the point where he is ready to take up arms against his oppressor. A man who has lost faith in the peacemakers of the West. While they argue, and while they fail to support a man like Bishop Tutu and his request for economic sanctions against South Africa. Am I bugging you? To bug ya. Okay, Edge, play the blues.
So while they were touring the Joshua Tree in America, they started to collect live recordings, and they met up with people like B.B. King, and they were like, oh, maybe we'll make a movie. But they started to just get a grab bag of songs. And like I said earlier, they were good at making live versions that were as good or better than the studio versions. They were good at B-sides. So they got a little collection called Rattle and Hum. So you got your B-sides, your live versions, and then a couple of covers of their favorite artists.
And there was also a collection of singles that were also released off of Rattle and Hum that had, the B-sides were more cover songs, and they included like Everlasting Love, which I really enjoyed that one. There was a version of Unchained Melody. It's a little over the top, but it's still kind of good. And one of my favorite songs is their cover of Dancing Barefoot.
She is a benediction. She is addicted to heat. She
is the root connection, and she is connecting with me. Here I go and I don't know why I spin so ceaselessly. Could it be he's taking over me? I'm dancing barefoot, headed for a spin. Some strange music drags me in. It makes me come up like some.
You know, they've covered everybody, but they love to cover Bob Dylan. They've covered him like 5 or 10 times. But they've covered, over their career, they've even covered the Ramones. They were inspired by them as a young band when they could barely play their instruments. So I promised I wasn't going to use the word prolific, but, you know, I think the reason U2 is so huge is because between the end of Unforgettable Fire and the end of the Joshua Tree tour, it's like they were a revival band almost. They got a bunch of converts around the globe and they recorded it all for posterity. And so you have Rattle and Hum, but you have just a plethora of covers and B-sides and live versions that, you know, you could listen to live versions. And that's the other thing I wanted to say is they've covered songs within other songs. The most famous one is obviously doing America from West Side Story. During Electrico,
during Bad, he would do a whole section yes. of songs. He's done like Sympathy for the Devil and Walk on the Wild Side in there.
But I've seen a comprehensive list of 100 songs. It's not just the songs that U2 has covered by other artists like Bob Dylan, but they've covered, like you said, it's a list where they list every time he's put a song in another song, you know, during a tour or on an album.
We're sitting in for Jim and Patrick, and they will be back soon. If you want to reach out to them and about anything associated with U2 and their B-sides and their cover songs and their general prolificness during this era, right, EPJ?
I think no more prolific. I mean, you could argue better if you don't like U2, but you couldn't argue that any band was more prolific than them during this period.
If you want to reach out to them, you can reach them through the Facebooks, the Twitters, the Instagrams. You can. Isn't there a number you can call?
612-440-1984. Or you could just what?
Does anybody call that number? Do you know anybody that
Maybe
does?
Maybe one crazy dude named EPJ, but I don't know. But what's the last method? Open up the window and what?
Open up the window and yell.
And when should you listen to Rock in the Suburbs? After your coffee? And then what else?
You just listen to it every day.
Right, every day.
You pick a time. Yeah. That's it for today. Thanks, everybody. I'm Mike Wagner. And
I'm Echo Park Jimmy.
And we will talk to you guys later.
Later.
Play that back. I'm not going to listen to it tonight. I got to walk my dog, so...